That's always such a quick start from the music. I want to welcome you to the second act with me. This is my third episode, and I'm really excited to talk to these two individuals. They have played different parts in my life and on my career, my caregiving journey in particular, Cameron. So today we are talking about exactly that, caregiving. Did you know 19% of Americans are caregivers today and growing? And you know what? It can be a full-time job. And I'm not exaggerating. As a brand new caregiver of exactly a year, Sunday, March 17th, when I got the crisis call, woo, I became a part of the 19%. And let me tell you, my head was not only spinning with so many thoughts and ideas and sadness, because I had to make the trip from Denver to Colorado Springs, not knowing what state my mother was going to be in, as she had just suffered one, as we found out, of many strokes. So today, again, we are going to talk about the five things that I personally, which I'm pretty sure everybody would say, are things that I wish I knew before my second job began March 17th of 2023. But first, I have to talk to you about aging. I have to talk to you about beauty brands. I have to talk to you about how they're flipping words so that they are sort of, but not really, but kind of, or trying to be a part of the pro-aging movement. And while some are doing it well, major beauty brands are not. And what I'm talking about is the anti-aging. That term alone, it sends us back when we're talking about trying to talk about growing older gracefully. And by the way, you will hear me say from time to time, you can do Botox, you could do what I'm on Mounjaro, you can do whatever you want to make yourself feel better. But what we don't like is when we are using terms like reverse signs and aging on brand packaging, visible age reversal, age defined, the word ageless, younger looking skin, those things, ladies and gents and allies, we are growing older. And so here's an open letter, a partial part of the open letter that myself and globally influencers of the pro-aging movement and content creators that are all over 40, minus the person who started this beautiful movement, Jacinth, who understands the age bias that we all feel. So here's a part of the letter. Get ready. An open letter to beauty brands, big and small. We love that more and more of you are moving away from shifting the focus from the outdated ageist anti-aging terminology. We want to believe that you're committed to being a part of our pro-aging movement and how we feel and the dialogue that we are championing about being positive and happy and healthy attitudes, having those things about aging itself, because it's natural. I just gained 3 minutes in aging, but it's somewhat concerning to many of us that so many of you are undermining still the fact that aging is natural. When some of you are using those terms to promote the narratives that mean the same as anti-aging or carrying anti-aging connotations in your terminology, on your brand packaging, in your commercials, and your branding, it goes against everything that we are fighting against, which is age biases. Anti-aging isn't just singular. It's not just an isolated term. It's a cultural narrative across the globe. So any language that represents aging as negative, like wrinkle-free, restore youth, prevent aging, age preventative, youth boost, erase age lines, it goes against everything we stand for. In essence, that's saying you're still for anti-aging. And we have got to stop that narrative. Today, I am showcasing the ad that you will see all across platforms that we have come together to do.
Terms that aren't anti-aging, but mean anti-aging.
Reverse the signs of aging.
Regain your youthful skin.
Age-defying.
Visible age reversal.
Age diminishing.
Youth elixir.
Restore. Age decline.
Erase lines.
Smooth away signs of aging.
Turn back time.
Age preventative.
Youth boost.
Anti-wrinkle.
Age rescue.
Age resisting.
Stop aging.
Age rejuvenate.
Age correcting.
Youthful looking.
Keeping that youthful look.
Maintain a youthful glow.
Age defying.
Anti-wrinkle.
Younger looking.
Reduce wrinkles.
Prevent aging.
Or don't use any prefixes or compound words that tell us aging is bad.
Aging is living. To live is to age, and to age is to live.
Don't you agree? If you are right now, if you are here with us today, you are alive and well and aging, and it is okay. You can't reverse it. You can't go back in time. We can't Benjamin Button it at all. Embrace it. Whatever aging means to you, embrace it. But beauty brands, we have got to stop the narrative about anti-aging. We just have to. It perpetuates the idea that when you reach a certain time in life, that you are over the hill instead of at the top of the hill, that you no longer are worth your value. It feeds into that narrative that globally has landed across all platforms, and we have to stop. LinkedIn, we're talking to you as well. So I wanted to begin the show by having us all embrace this time in our lives, no matter what chapter you're living at. And let's get on with the show. Caregiving. Here we go. Let's talk about caregiving today. Woo.
Wow. Holy cow.
That's right, really
powerful. And I'm sitting there going, okay, so what words can they use? I know we're talking about caregiving, but I want to go to what words can they use that embrace it?
I love that you just said that, because that is part two. I said that to this wonderful human being, Jacinth Bassett, who's in the UK, who has the podcast Aging, Ageism is Never in Style. And this was her brainchild. And I said, you know what? It's true. We have to have this campaign. We have to stop this narrative. We have to stop these words. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is, what should we be saying? What can we be saying? What can they own? What can we all own? Because again, it's okay that, you know, we're all using those products for whatever reason, you know, Dove at night, you know, moisturizers and all of that, so our skin stays supple, or whatever it may be that you're using those products, your products for. But that's part two. She literally told me today, she listened, she said, you know what? You're right. We need to have the other side of that and have another video, another a brand campaign that says, what can we use? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Because it really ties to our older adults too, and the way we talk about our older adults. So it's really, what narrative are we going to use, all of us?
What narrative?
That doesn't create ageism, because ageism happens in our older adults' lives.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and yeah. You'll see it all through caregiving too.
Oh, well, talking about caregiving, you're absolutely right. And one of our viewers said that they are part of the 19%. We've all been a part of the 19%. And so I would like for you to, Catherine, we'll start with you. I've known you the longest since I started Second Act Women. We were co-working from the same space. Our little pooches love each other.
Yes, they're best buddies and twinsies almost.
Absolutely. What I love about you is that you left corporate America. So you were in technology and you had something happen to your father, and caregiving was involved. A new home was involved. And what you decided to do was create a solution for the problem that you encountered. So let's talk about your story and how Serenity Engage in this, and you entering the world of HTEC.
Yeah, I mean, I never would have thought it 10 years ago. If you would have said this is what I'd be doing, I'd be like, you're full of baloney. And as you pointed out, my whole career was spent in the technology space. Then in 2010, my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and we began that slow journey of my mom's disease progressing. As it progressed, we quickly learned that dad could not live on his own because mom wasn't able to do the things that she used to do for him. When we moved her into a memory care, he said, I'm going to move into an independent living. That's what I'm going to do. So he was like a little kid. It was adorable. He went out and he found himself an independent living where his buddies had already moved in. And that's where he moved in. And within a month, I had 4 phone calls that he was in the ER from falls. 4 in 1 month. And like you, Barbara, I grew up in Colorado Springs. I live in Denver. I had to trek down there every time. And the last time I said, I cannot do this anymore, Dad. And I really tried. I tried. And he looked at me like it was hard. He looked at me like a little kid and said, I don't want to move to Denver. And I'm like, this is heartbreaking because I can't keep doing this. And I have brothers who were very, very helpful. I don't want to discount that, but I am the female in the family. Mm-hmm. And I naturally became that primary care coordinator. So we moved Dad up, and the rest I'm sure we'll just be talking about throughout the show. But my story is not unusual, and I did create Serenity around my experience, just as you're doing, Barbara, right now, and just as Cameron has done in her life. So I love seeing all these women and humans coming together and saying, no more, enough. We're not going to put up with the system the way it is today. Barbara, you're on mute. I don't know if you knew that. I'm sure what you said was genius, though.
I know, right? My dog was barking at the neighborhood dog. And it is so tough navigating the system. Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting before we head into Cameron's story is how many of us, and those of us that are listening and watching, how many of us have had friends who became caregivers, and you hear about the tragedy of their parent having to go move to a nursing home or assisted living, which, by the way, we have to remember there's so many different types of homes, because they've had a stroke, they're no longer mobile, or they're partially mobile, or they just simply, the signs were there and they needed to go to assisted living. But we would hear them tell these stories, and you're not understanding really what they're going through at all, right? All three of us at all until it happens to you.
Yep.
And when it happens to you, it was like, what? I will never not listen to someone intently when they are sharing their story, because now having been there in camera, I mean, talk about your story. You're the one who helped me after so many people telling me I need to call Cameron Crawford. and we'll talk about that. But talk about your story, because this is a difficult thing in our lives.
Absolutely. And everything you're saying is like, both of y'all are like triggering things in my brain. So when I was about, I think it was 38 or 39, I remember I was at my daughter's soccer game. She was in preschool and I'm watching these little four-year-olds on the soccer field. And my mom calls me at the same time and says, I've just been to the doctor and the doctor said they think I might have Alzheimer's. And so I was, none of my friends were going through this at the time. I was way younger than, you know, a lot of people. My mom was only 65. And so it like threw me into that sandwich generation where I've got a preschooler over here that I'm wanting to give attention to and she needs nurturing. And then all of a sudden I have this mom that needs attention and nurturing and feeling pulled between both sides. And and I'm a lot like Catherine, you know, my role in the family is I like jump in and get things done and I'm a researcher. And, but I literally, I was doing all those things, but for the first 4 years I cried. I was just heartbroken. And I remember.
And you feel alone, right, Cameron? Yes. You just feel alone.
I'm all alone. And my parents live in Texas. So I would fly back and even go to the doctor's appointments because I couldn't trust her to tell me what the doctor said. And then my dad, as sweet as he was, that is not his gift. And so I would go to the doctor's appointments. And I remember flying back and seeing this couple about the same age as my parents going to Hawaii or something.
Yes.
I broke out in tears. And I just thought it was, I call it mom envy. I was like, well, I want that to be my family. I want my mom to be the one coming to take care of my kids for the weekend so we can get away. And that's not our story and that's fine, but it was a lot to wrap my head around.
It is a lot. And I'm hoping that as we go through today with the five tips we all wish we knew, and there's going to be a lot more than that, right, ladies? Mm-hmm. That people hang in there because, again, you may not be a you may not be a part of that 19% yet. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say the word yet, but you may be one day. And we're here to help you sort of navigate some of what may mm-hmm. happen that you may need to do. Let's talk about tip number one is who will be the caregiver? So you get the crisis call and let's take a step back. You get that call, but before that, you might not have even had the discussion, the will talk, the file and banking account talk and power of attorney talk. So let's just pretend you haven't had any of that discussion with your loved one, and which, by the way, is a very difficult for most, a very difficult conversation, right? But now you've gotten the call, it's the crisis, all things are in motion, and you're thinking, well, who, if you have siblings, it is about who will be that caregiver and how do you make those decisions? And, you know, if none of those things have been tied up beforehand, you know, the tip is to start the conversation early, right? What are some of those things that came up during this time about the caregiving, the very beginning of the process? Because again, this tip number one is starting the conversation early.
Yeah. And my family we're not communicate. I mean, I over communicate everything, but the rest of my family, we're not going to talk. And in my family growing up, this is true. My mom had a red folder, like a red binder in their file cabinet. And she said, if there's ever an emergency, everything's in the red folder. And it was like this secret red folder that none of us ever touched. And she's been saying this since I was in high school. And it's like, what's in the red folder? I can't wait to see what's in the red folder. So once we got the diagnosis, I'm like, I'm looking at the red folder. So, okay. Now
it's red folder time.
No one else in my family thought we should touch the red folder, but I'm like, I'm going in. I opened it up. I'm from Texas. Sweet, sweet Southern Baptist family. In the red folder was a brochure that if the rapture had happened and I'd been left behind, what I should do. And
what?
okay, this isn't like really helpful right now.
Now, wait, if the rapture happens, remember, and you happen to be the last human on Earth.
Everybody else is gone. I'm the only one left. I'm going to the red folder, and there are the answers.
And the red folder also survived.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, good point. Good point.
So I was like, all right, that's not very helpful. And what's really funny is probably 7 or 8 years later, one of my brothers said, you know, I think we should look in the red folder. And I'm like, oh, been there, go done that. It. There is nothing there.
So, no, you should have said, go for it, buddy. Yeah, here you go.
Remember what's in the red folder.
Oh my gosh. So
we, you know, I like to lean into things, and I would ask my dad about power of attorneys, wills, all of that. And it was a big secret in our family. And I don't know why.
Wow.
Kind of like, it's like, oh, something happened. Surprise. Now you can find out what isn't in the red folder, but what are all these practical documents that we need? And so by the time we got to them, and I let my dad, like, just having him share that information with me was a big deal in my family. I know lots of other families are way more balanced, but, you know, we're quirky. And what I found out is that even though they had some of the documents, they were way out of date. So the executor. So anyway, there's basically four main documents that everyone should have.
Okay.
So you should have a durable power of attorney that counts as your financial power of attorney. You should have a medical power of attorney, so that you can talk.
That's to me. Patients. Mm-hmm. My brother, I'm the medical. My brother is the durable. Okay.
Well, my brother's medical and I'm durable. So, you know, it's nice. Families can figure out who's the best person for each job.
Right.
There should be a will. And it's really nice if the executor that's listed on the will is actually still alive. Because my dad's executor is retired in 84 and, believe it or not, does not want to be the executor anymore. And so, I can see who is on that, because if they made their wills and their power of attorneys when you were 18, you might not be listed.
Oh yeah.
So, the wills, and then also advanced directives. And these are things that tell the physicians and tell the family what's important to them at end of life and what kind of care they need or they don't need. And I saw it, my father-in-law just passed away in the fall. And this was so important to my mother-in-law and my husband, because he was rushed to the hospital and they didn't have the directives with him. And so they gave him a ventilator and he's on that. And so then, even though that wasn't his wish, but then you have to make the decision at some point to take him off the ventilator. And that was a heart-wrenching.
That's hard.
Heart. And so my husband and my mother-in-law would sit there and my mother-in-law would say, could you read it to me again? Let's just read it again. I want to make sure I understand what he wants. And we would read it. It says in there very clearly, I don't want to be on a ventilator. But for her peace of mind, she needed to keep going back to that and hear it several times before she could make that decision.
Wow.
So,
what would you add to that, Catherine, about starting the conversation earlier and who will be the caregivers? Because, you know, even though someone's doing health and financial, you're still in it together. Mm-hmm. So you're still all caregivers if you're involved in everything.
Yeah, very much so. And my story was a little different in that my parents did keep everything up to date. They went to a lawyer and had it all. I know. Wow. I was like so lucky.
So lucky.
So everything was always up to date. But when it came to who's going to provide the care, my dad actually one day said, Catherine, I want you to come over. I want to talk to you. So I come over, I sit down. He hands me an AARP magazine article that talks about the eldest daughter. And he basically said to me, I want you to read this article because you are going to be the person who's going to have to care for us. Oh. And the term eldest daughter in the industry, industry, whatever industry means,
right,
is a designation for the female in the family who steps into the role of primary director, basically, of everything that's happening.
Uh-huh.
And I was medical and financial power of attorney along with one of my brothers. So the two of us did it together.
Okay.
But you know, I took care of most of the care, and my brothers were incredible. And I, in my family, I feel like we were lucky enough that we all just fell into our jet streams. I know where I'm really good. My brothers know where they're really good. And even if that's just showing up to have lunch with dad on a weekend, that's beautiful. That saves everybody time and keeps the connection alive with dad. So I would say, I don't know that you have to sit. I think it's overwhelming for people to say, I want to sit down and have this conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you have to do that, but I do think you have to have some high level cursory. Hey, you know, if something happened, who do you think would be the best person to provide care for me?
Mm-hmm. And understanding those legal matters, as Cameron was saying,
so, very important.
Very important. And then, you know, the second tip is knowing the signs when it's time.
Oh,
because, and I'll share my story. Do one of you have a story about knowing those signs that it's time to
for sure assisted living
or nursing or Well, go ahead, Catherine.
Oh, so for me, it was my mom couldn't add the tip on the check anymore at the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Out of the blue, we're watching her struggle and just add it completely wrong. And then we'd have to pull the check and scratch it all out and redo it. Mm-hmm. And that's when we knew something was off. Mm-hmm. You know, the best tip I was ever given about caregiving and when to move somebody into a community environment where they can get more support than they can get at home. This person said to me, you don't move someone when they're ready. You move someone when you are ready, when you can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, Barbara, it's a full-time job, right? I mean, Cameron and I have talked about this so many times, and her with her Facebook group that it's like so powerful, such strong support for caregivers.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job. So you have to get to this point where you can say to yourself, it's okay that I'm moving my loved one in. And let me tell you, and Cameron, I know you can echo this over and over and over. I have seen people not want to move mom or dad in because they promised they wouldn't. When they finally do, guess what happens?
They love
that older adult thrives.
Yeah.
They thrive because they have the support, they have community, they have regular meals that are nutritious, they have engagement. Mm-hmm. It changes their world. It may not happen the first day, but it happens.
You're so right. That happened with my mom. And I have to say something you just said. I remember Kelly O'Connor, that we all know, had said in one of the sessions that she has led for our community was, never say to your parents, I promise I will not put you in assisted in any home. Never say that, because the chances are if something happens, you might have to, and now you're going to, now the guilt is even greater, I would imagine. And for me, you know, my story is a little bit different in that my mom was, you know, she had a home of 50 years. We learned that she no longer could go back home to her house. Mm-hmm. So when it was time to move her to a home, she didn't say no. She didn't turn us down at all. She said, okay, I've had my time in my house. And if you know Bobby Brooks, her house was her castle. Like there would be times, y'all, I'd be waking up in the middle of the or early morning. My mom is knocking out a wall, and I'm not kidding. Knocking out a wall to open up this place.
Why does that not surprise me?
Not surprising. And then calling a contractor to finish the job later. But you know, and she would hibernate during the winter, and then spring was the time she would, you know, Bobby Brooks come alive working in her yard. And so the signs were there, though, for my brother and I, going back to number to again, this tip of knowing the signs is after this happened, that's when we Googled and we found out the signs. But there was January and February of last year when I was going home. So again, her we got the crisis call. Her stroke happened March 17th. So but just before that, I had gone home and the house was not quite what my mother always had her house be, right? She was a clean freak. Trash was the dumpster. Kitchen's always clean, right? Refrigerator full of food because we love food. refrigerator full of food, pantry full of food, the whole bit. I was coming home and the house was full. The trash bags were full of Domino's Pizza, Panda Express, Chick-fil-A, Taco Bell. Like, you name it, she wasn't cooking for herself any longer. The refrigerator was now empty. And there were all these things that were just, and other personal things that, that when we looked back after the stroke happened, we said, uh-oh.
Yeah.
She had 5 of the 10 signs that said that she needed to be in assisted living just to live the rest of her life happily in another home. And y'all that are watching, I'm not from Texas, unlike Cameron. My mom is, so I can say y'all though. You can Google some of the other signs, but those were the signs that I recognized too late. And my brother and I had actually made a pact just before her stroke that every other week would be my turn, his turn, my turn, him turn. So I had literally made a Facebook post saying, my new home, I'm going to spend part 2 weeks here and 2 weeks in the Springs.
I remember that post. Can I ask a question of Cameron?
Sure.
Cameron, what is it? So there's the signs, right? That we can recognize or not recognize, but what is the impetus most of the time for somebody to move into a home?
You know, I would say it's probably hospitalization. Something happens. And the thing is, like, we were the same way. We look back and then I saw my mom was so smart and she would cover up things.
Yeah.
She wouldn't pay the checks. Well, if we went to a restaurant, she'd say, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Will you pay this? And then she would leave. Or she couldn't order off of the menu anymore. And she would say, I'll just have what you're having. And then kind of like Barbara was talking about, her mom with her house was always clean. My mom was Texas beauty queen with clothes. And she showed up to visit me and she was wearing jeans and an ugly jacket. Now, that might be normal for most people, for my mom.
I get it.
No, right then to like.
Totally get it.
Something is wrong.
And I totally get it. Yep.
Yeah. And then, so then you can look back and you can see things like, oh, are her pots burned because she put something on the stove and forgot to take them off? Is she not able to manage her finances? That's so huge. And people a lot of times say, I don't want to take that away because I want to keep them independent, but there is so much elder fraud and abuse right now with finances that someone should be looking over the bank accounts if you have any concerns at all, because losing $30,000 is a hard way to learn a lesson when you're going to need that for care.
Wow. Yeah. And Cameron, speaking of homes, how I found you was because we were looking for a home up here, because my mom had determined that originally when all this went down, we asked her where she wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And she's wanted to live in the Springs because that's where all her church folk are. Her sister, who's also in assisted living or nursing home, is down there, but unable to leave her space. Mm-hmm. But my mom, you know, at the time she's thinking, well, her church people will come. I'm in Denver, so at least she'll have people coming in and out of the room, you know, maybe every week or two. Mm-hmm. And we watched something together and it happened to be that someone said, when you're in a time of crisis, those people sort of disappear. They have their own lives. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get the visitors as much as you thought that you would. And so when my mom heard that, she said, we asked her again as we're preparing another time. And she said, you know what? Denver. I want to be close to you, Barbara. That way you don't have to be coming down. And she said, I'd rather be in Denver. Nice. And so we were very blessed in that happened. Mm-hmm. But then we were stuck with, because you, when you're at the hospital, a lot of people don't know, you're given a caregiver or a social worker. And so that social worker given
if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Right. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't always get a social worker. You might get a care manager.
The care planner.
And they're way too busy. Yeah. They want is you out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. So all they can do, they can't recommend anything. Yeah. All they can do is give you pamphlets.
A ton of pamphlets, by the way.
Yes.
A ton of pamphlets. I was lost. And so
it's not their fault.
And then what you do is, because this is before when I thought I was going to move her and she was going to stay in the Springs, I'm like traveling all across Colorado Springs trying to find the right place, a veteran's place, because she's a veteran, this place, that place. But then because of that, Cameron, you came about because people said, I need to go to you. And we were able to find the best home. She loves it. It's only a 12-person nursing or assisted living. They have several. It's called Rocky Mountain Assisted Living. But Cameron, how did you get into the business and then decided I'm going to help people find a home? And how, give us tips on how you find that when it's time.
Sure. So when my mom had a big decline and my dad wanted her to move up by me in Colorado. And so I called an online place to find, I heard him advertise. They said I could call. They'd give me advice. And I called them and he recommended a place close to my house that has a really bad reputation. And I said, since I'm a researcher, I go, well, they have a horrible reputation. Why would you send me there? And he's like, well, I don't know. I've never been there. And I'm like, where do you live? And he lived in Kansas. And I thought, well, I can Google. I didn't need you to do that. I needed someone to give me advice that had been there. And I wanted somebody to hold my hand through the process. So I did as best as I could as a daughter, not really knowing what I was doing. I think I went to like 12 places to look at, kind of like Barbara. I was driving all over, anywhere in town, anybody whose cousin's sister had lived somewhere, I was there. And they're all so beautiful now. They really are beautiful.
They are.
And they have like beautiful chandeliers, but you don't know the care history, you don't know the background, and you don't know if it's appropriate. One sweet salesperson pulled me aside and they're like, you know what? This is not the right place for your mom. Your mom's care needs are too high. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for being honest with me.
And they aren't all. They aren't all.
Okay. And that's another thing is picking a place. It's great to go to a person like you because you have to, if they have a certain amount of medications that they're taking, that place won't take them if it's over 12 medications, or whatever it may be. And then there's, depending on their needs, can my mom actually walk if she was able to at least get up to her walker? So we were able to still get her an assistant. There's different types of homes, right, Cameron? Yes. And Catherine, there's nursing, there's assisted. Tell us about it's mind blowing.
Yeah. So I'm my company I started because I would just take my friends to look. Since I'd started this road way longer before any of them did, I would take them to go see places. And then I found out that this was a job. So placement agents are people that they should be able to talk to you. Ideally, you want somebody locally that lives in the area, that is in and out of the buildings all the time. And they should be looking at what your care needs are, because that's crucial. Why are we moving if it's not going to meet our care needs? What your budget is. And so it's all these things you've avoided talking about. So you have to know what the budget is and you have to be realistic of what that should look like. And if you start the process with somebody that knows the system, if you don't have a lot of money, they can usually help you find a place. Mm. It might not be right next door to you, but they can help you find a place that's going to meet your care needs and your budget. And then, those are the vital items. And then the other things are like socialization. What do they like? What brings them joy? What might be fun for them? Do they like natural light? Do they need to bring their dog? Because that's
another great point. Yes.
Pet friendly. Yeah.
If they're pet friendly. Yeah.
Cameron can't say that. she has integrity in her job, but I can, because I'm not.
You can, but you and I can't, Catherine.
I will say to the audience, please, please do not ever call one of those national hotlines. And you all know who I'm talking about when you need to find a place for mom or dad to move. Please don't. Please find a local.
Okay.
If you're going to use a placement agent, please make sure they are local, because as Cameron said, they are the people who know the owners and operators. They know the care staff. Mm-hmm. They know the care levels. They will shortcut everything that you have on your list and save you hours and hours and hours of time.
Mm-hmm. Hours of time, because Cameron and I have a funny story actually about mine. We went to, and the thing is too, for me, I didn't know there were actual homes in like Highland Ranch and all these other places are homes that are converted into adaptive living, or not adaptive living, sorry, assisted living or nursing homes. And we saw one or two, and I was like, no, this isn't, that's not my mom's vibe. We need like a house that's, I'll just say it, that's kind of bougie and nice and, you know, marble countertops. And luckily we were able to find that. But the funny thing is, Cameron, right? Thank God, Cameron. So you said they will take you, play. They will be on your journey with you. Literally they will, because Cameron and I, went place to place, but we were in two different cars, and it was a rainy day or about to rain. It was a little passed over. And who runs out of gas? The ADH person who forgets things and forgot she needed to get gas. Thank God you were behind me, Cameron.
Well, and I'm dying laughing. That is so you, Barbara.
So me.
Completely love about working with somebody that's like a real person that's there with you. I mean, like, we laughed. We're like driving around trying to find a gas station. And, when you're going.
They need more gas stations in Highland Ranch area.
Nothing close by. But when you're going through a hard time, if you don't have a sister or a friend or somebody that's on that journey with you, it is super lonely and sad. And not that we're not talking about life-changing things, but to be able to sit in the car and laugh and be with someone else.
Yeah, for sure.
It just makes you feel better. It just takes some of the fear, and you're not in it alone.
And you didn't make me feel bad. And I have to admit, I was not very nice to Cameron when I first met her, because the stress that happens, the guilt, the frustration, a lot of things were happening because a lot of things happen at once. Mm-hmm. And I used a couple of curse words with Cameron because I felt like I wasn't, you know, this, that, and the other. It turns out we had miscommunicate, blah, blah, blah. And she has been, you were so gracious when I was in that moment of time trying to get stuff done. You were so gracious and kind. And I've, you know, anytime I could throw this woman business, I will. Let's talk about, so thank you again to the world. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about another one, is adapting to changing roles. Catherine, you kind of talked about this. Sadly, you're doing it all in a sense, or you were, leading the changing roles that happens. And from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not proper or not the right terminology for us to say we're now parenting our parents. From what I understand, that's not, because you are. You have become now the parent, you know, taking care of even briefs, you know, do they need, because, you know, when they find the home, there's a lot of things, the right kind of toilet, the toilet lift. There's all these things that the parents had to do when we were younger. So speak to that, Catherine.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you say you're parenting your parent, and I said the same thing when I was doing it, like I'm now the parent. So there's a journey to, you know, adapt to that new role. But when you say you're parenting your parent, the difference between a child and someone who's 70, 80, 60, 50, I mean, I know lots of people who are doing this at even younger ages now. They still have independence. They still have the ability to make their own decisions on things. Whereas a child, you're fully responsible for them and you're raising and teaching them. And while over time, my mom lost her ability to do that, and I truly was a parent, she couldn't talk the last 2 years of her life. She was nonverbal. But before that, if she had said, I don't want this, the community she was in had to respond to that. They had to deal with her as an adult, an independent adult, not what Kathy wanted. So it's a tricky situation. And you certainly don't want to ever give your parent the feeling that they are being parented by their child. So that's, I think, the reason not to talk that way, because you don't want to think that way, but you truly are taking care of them and doing all the things. I mean, we should have bought stock in Depend ages and ages and ages ago. Like, I can't even believe how much we went through.
Oh, I bet.
With both parents. Yeah.
Well, and Catherine, the reason why you came up with your tech company was communication.
Yeah.
Was the new role now as the caregiver in this new role and having to be an advocate for your father, being doing all of these things that you're having to do in your new changing role, communication can be difficult.
Yeah, so I bet if you were to make a spreadsheet of all the people that you have to communicate with about the care of your mom, Barbara, and you, Cameron, when you did it, it would be astronomical. I counted mine. It was 37 people. Wow. 37 different people that I had to juggle, and they didn't talk to each other and they didn't talk to me.
Oh my gosh.
And they're the ones providing care for the people I love the most on this planet. So that's why Serenity started, was to bring everyone together. And it's even the little things, right, Cameron? It's the little things like me being able to just post a quick message. How's my dad's Depend supply? Because notoriously,
by the way, we call them briefs. We call them briefs,
which is a much better word.
I learned that from Rocky.
Don't use Depends. Don't follow me. They're briefs.
It's so that they can maintain their dignity. Uh-huh. It's what I was. Yeah.
We called them super panties at first.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
I love it.
So yeah, the communication is really important. And then the ability to help them. So dad was in assisted living. So anything I could do to help him stay as independent as possible. And that's where Serenity has grown and added smart devices in the rooms. So an older adult could say, Echo, what's for dinner today? And it tells them what's on the menu for their community. Echo, what are today's activities? Echo, call for help. Echo, call my daughter. They get messages from the community to their device. And believe it or not, these are big buildings that people live in. Even the homes will have hot water issues. They'll have elevators down. They'll have, you know, other things happening that they need to communicate to everyone. Yeah. So
new team members. Talent. I mean, new staff.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about that. We're in a global staffing crisis. There are not enough people to care for the people we love. Mm-hmm. So they have to start relying on technology families to step up and provide care. So think about the consistency of care of your loved one when the staff is always changing. And what Serenity can do is keep the continuity of communication there. So even if it's a new staff member, they come in and they can see exactly what is going on with this older adult. They're like up to speed like that. But you know, one of the things before I leave this topic, I just want to say the transition into care coordinator can happen overnight or it can happen really slowly. It doesn't matter. It's not easy. And just feel like you're not alone is the most important thing, and reach out and talk to people. Get on Cameron's Facebook group. Look for resources, because there's a grieving process that's happening and you don't even know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. So that leads into the next tip is exactly that. It's about getting a support network because there's going to be times, and this is where you come in again, Cameron, there's going to be times where patience is golden, but it's hard. It's hard. There's going to be anger. As you said, there's grief. You don't even know if you cry. There's a lot. There's anger. There's frustration.
Yes.
Anger with your parents because you're sad over this new thing. So it creates like this. So there's so much. So let's talk about this last tip, which is embracing support networks for the emotional challenges that we're all going to face, whether you've gotten the crisis call or it's naturally that they're moving to a new home. Right, Cameron?
Absolutely. And one of the, it's a good thing. It's sad that we all have to be in this sisterhood. It's like the sorority none of us wanted to join, but we're here. So
well said.
We're going to do the best that we can.
Yeah. I'm still a pledge. You guys are active members.
when I started, I didn't have friends that were going through it. So I would ask my parents' friends because they were going through it with their parents. And I'd call somebody and say, what's the best grief that you're using? And now there's so many more options and mm-hmm. so much more support. And so if you think, I wish that somebody could help me with this, there's probably somebody that can. And so making a list of who is your tribe, who is your support.
Yes.
If you're the eldest daughter, probably that's going to be your role. You're going to be the grandmaster of everything. But you can bring in care. You can bring in, a private pay care manager if you're not sure what to do, if you want somebody to assess the situation. If you're not sure where to move your parent, you can get a placement agent to help you with that. If you're not sure to do what finances, you can hire a financial advisor. So there's lots of opportunities. If you don't have the money to do that, there are other things for you too. There are grants that can give you respite care. That means that you can, if you have your person living with you, they can get a respite grant for 5 days in Colorado where they can go stay at a place. And then there's lots of local resources where they have companions that will come to your house and be like a friend and visit them once a week. There's transportation. But pulling all that together is not easy because it's also...
because of that list of 34 people.
Yeah. And that's just like probably for one person. And so I think that being in a support group is really helpful. There's a lot of Alzheimer's support groups you can find on the Alzheimer's webpage.
Tell us about yours. You have one.
Yeah, I run one called the Aging Parent Tribe. It's a Facebook group. And I say you can find everything on there from how to get my mom to take a shower, how to take the keys away, how to get somebody to wear depends, or if you just need chicken soup recipes or you want to vent.
Yes.
There was on there recently that just said, I don't want to be a whiner, but this is so hard. And it's everyone in that group understands what that looks like.
It's so hard. And I was thinking, I was about to say earlier, I mentioned a moment ago about crying. I didn't even cry until months later, I think. You're just in go mode. Mm-hmm. And listen, you're talking to someone who's very sensitive. I mean, they called me Stormy when I was, my Texas cousins called me Stormy because I'm very sensitive. And it's like I put my mom's hat on. I mean, I'm actually very strong in a lot of areas, much like my mom. So it was like business hat on. I created a spreadsheet, which I highly recommend. I created, a document that just had, and that spreadsheet had banking account numbers, passwords, like all that stuff that you are starting to get access to as you're talking to the 34 plus people. Yeah. And I think that's a really great tip, just kind of an off tip, is just start documenting. And let's go in before we end. Let's go in with the last tip. And the last tip is self-care.
Yeah. Because
we don't believe that we're earned it. I think as women, it's very hard for us sometimes because again, we just want to go. What will both of you say? And what did you do for self-caring for yourselves in those times?
I just didn't.
Yeah.
And I can't say that I would do it much different looking back.
Good for you.
But I wish I would have had more mindfulness. I wish I would have been more mindful.
Yeah.
And more present, because I was just running. Okay, I'm here to visit mom. Okay, go upstairs, visit dad. Okay, go pick up the kids, go, you know, whatever. Yeah. I wish I would have been more present. Yeah.
For your own family is what you mean?
For my mom, for my dad, for me, for my family. And then I would say I would probably ask for more help from my brothers. They were fantastic. They did anything I asked them to do. But I didn't always ask.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so if I don't ask, they don't know.
I hear this as an often what happens, right, Cameron, is there is something about us as women that sometimes we just don't want to ask. I don't know if it's being seen. I don't know what it is, but yeah. And that's funny you should say that, Catherine, because you said, had I asked, then they did everything, you know. It's just, it's a question. Cameron, what do you say to self-care and prioritizing this time? Because we neglect our own well-being, our own mental, there's sleepless nights. There's, you know, is your parent going to make it? How long is, you know?
I would have a friend you can vent to. You need to have somebody that's your person, or hire a counselor.
Yeah.
You know, I think having a counselor is a great idea, because you are dealing with every emotion from your childhood that you've probably avoided. I think therapeutic writing and journaling is really helpful. And it's a great way later on to be able to look back and see what you've made it through and see the highs and the lows. You forget both of those. And
that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good, Cameron.
Yeah, that's really good. Laura Cheadle, if you could tell us more about looking forward to this. That's really good. I just want to say thank you. There will be more times than not that we're going to have this conversation inside of, not only inside of this podcast that I've now launched, but also, as you two know, all three of us living here in Colorado, some of the workshops and activities and events. And Cameron, I'm going to see you at our Biz LifeCon, where you're going to be leading a session and a roundtable to further educate people. To learn more about Biz LifeCon, go to bizlifecon.com. Catherine, where can they find you, and how can they advocate for having your technology inside of their homes?
Yeah, to advocate, contact me. Let's talk. And to find me, it's www.serenityconnect.com.
No longer do you need to say www.
I know. But you know what? I'll be honest, Barbara.
That ages us.
In this industry, though, when I leave it off, people are like, what is that? Is that your website?
Okay.
The senior living and senior care industry behind the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that's right. Cameron, where can they find you if they are recognizing some signs, or they're Googling now, is my parent ready, or my loved one?
Sure.
Where can they find you?
My website is next.
www.nextstepsenior.com.
And then my Facebook group is the Aging Parent Tribe Denver, but we have people from all over the world in it.
I love it. I want to ask you one last question. Two things. I want to know, what are you either reading, listening to, or watching? Either one of those.
I just finished. Oh, wait, I got the name. The Personal Librarian. Have you
read that? Oh, we read that in my book club. So good.
It was fabulous.
So good.
So that's exciting. I just read The Midnight Library. I loved it.
Oh, so good. Things on libraries? That's,
I know.
Right.
It's a really good one. If you haven't read it, this author is amazing.
Love it. I'm now reading Worthy by Jenna, and I forgot her last name, but she is the founder of It Cosmetics. So inspirational. Okay, last question is, I love to ask people this, is what, now we're all in our 50s. What would you tell your future self? Cameron?
Would say, I'm not going to age gracefully, but I'm going to do it with style and humor.
Boom. Mic drop.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
That's great.
I would say, and what I say to myself and my husband all the time is, let's have all our paperwork in place and be happy when we move to a senior living and love and embrace it so that we don't do this to our kids.
Yeah. I love that you said that because it's so true. Because how many times before I end, how many times do all of us that are going through this say to ourselves, we would never do this to someone else, but we're so engrossed in what we're doing and life gets to lifing and we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And now we have now become the ones who have left behind the mess for people to pick up when this happens. So I think we should end on that get a next of kin box going. Actually, there is a such thing. It's a Colorado company. Google it, next of kin box, or just get an old school file system, a red folder, whatever it may take.
Red folder.
Get those four documents that she mentioned that I will put inside of the show notes together. Ladies, I love you. I appreciate you so much.
Love you too.
Both of you. You all mean so much. And Catherine, I can't wait till we're working at a co-working space together.
Me too. Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. I want to say thank you for watching the, I almost said the morning cup. I keep saying that. Thank you for watching Second Act with Barbara Brooks. And I'll see you back here next Thursday at 9 a.m. Mountain Time live right here on YouTube. Subscribe, will ya? Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.